After 6 years, three different trials, suspended RNC Constable Douglas Snellgrove has been found guilty of sexual assault that he committed back in 2014. Laura Winters is the executive director of the St. John's Status of Women Council. She joins the program. Good morning, Ms. Winters.
Good morning, Jerry Lynn. Before I dive in, I think we should give a trigger warning to folks, and obviously we're going to be speaking about sexual violence here, and there may be many survivors in our community who are just not able to listen to that kind of conversation this morning after the high-profile media this week. So we just want to give that trigger warning to start.
Yep, that is wise, because it certainly has brought on many emotions for many different people. But how significant is the guilty verdict?
I think what it is a sense of relief for the community. That's what we're hearing from women who are impacted, and hopefully a sense of closure for Jane Doe. I mean, this has been more than 6 years in the making, a long and arduous process. I think, you know, what we haven't seen is justice achieved, and every survivor gets to, you know, provide their own definition of justice, but this is certainly a harmful and lengthy process. And again, we hope that there's closure and peace and relief for Jane Doe and the other women impacted, because I think what we've seen is really a collective sense of women in community seeing themselves in Jane Doe and identifying, you know, with the experience of sexual assault, which is far too common.
As the jury took some time and asked questions of the judge and even signaled that they may not be able to reach a unanimous decision, how stressful was that for you?
Well, I think, you know, across the community, we were just hearing that women were kind of collectively holding their breath and really concerned about the outcome of this and what it would mean in terms of moving forward. And again, I think there's been so much said about the bravery and courage of Jane Doe, and that is so very true. I mean, the unimaginable courage it takes to go through this, not once, but three times. I think she's done something in opening up conversations in community about sexual violence, in, you know, providing a space to talk about this. And again, for other women to see themselves in her and understand that they're not alone in the experience of sexual violence, and especially at the hands of those in power. I think that's a big piece here that's sometimes getting lost, that this is about violence, you know, that was perpetrated by police. And this is not uncommon that individuals in positions of power are the ones perpetrating the violence.
How difficult has it been for the victim to tell her story so many times?
Well, I think that's something that only she can answer, though I do, you know, we work every day with people who've experienced forms of violence, including sexual violence, and it is a really difficult thing to come forward. It does take a lot of courage and a lot of bravery. And I also want to say, sometimes not coming forward is courageous and brave. Sometimes women who have experienced sexual violence are protecting themselves and staying safe in their own lives, and that is also courageous and brave. So no matter what somebody's, you know, healing journey looks like, you know, we're here when women want to reach out, but women also know what's best to keep themselves safe. I think it's really telling, you know, we as an organization did not organize the protest on the steps of the courthouse. We had staff attend there, but women as a community were coming together in a very grassroots way, which has always happened, to do what's needed and help keep each other safe and show support for the woman who was in the courtroom. So I think that's very telling, the fact that this was not, you know, community organizations doing this organizing. It was women in a grassroots way to support each other.
What will it do, though, to the trust that some women feel in the police?
I think that's certainly been broken by this instance and, you know, many other instances. These systems, again, are not designed in women-centered, person-centered ways, the criminal justice system, nor our policing system. They're designed in patriarchal, colonialist frameworks that really don't work for the people they're supposed to be protecting. those who are most marginalized. And I think that's really important here as well. The people who, you know, gender-based violence happens to any women, but it happens, there's women who are even more at risk, people, women living in poverty who are criminalized, women engaged in sex work, queer women, trans women, non-binary folks. So these communities are even at increased risk, and certainly these systems are not designed with their protection in mind.
What about the justice system needs to change to keep this from continuing to happen?
That's a very big question. And I think, you know, there's been lots of talk about things like training judges and trauma-informed practice and having training around sexual assault. And those are really great starts. But again, the system was not designed for the healing or to achieve justice even for survivors. So I think what we need is a bigger, broader conversation about change and what justice can look like from a transformative, restorative lens. And survivors need to be at the center of those conversations. So certainly that's not for me to say, that's for the community to say. And those conversations need to be opened and broadened in a way that hasn't happened historically in order to create change within that system. So obviously what we've got is not working in terms of, you know, creating harm. There's a lot of harm and a lot of re-victimization here. And again, you said for the woman who experiences, but also for the broader community of survivors who are watching this unfold, the harms will ripple. And I think there's a lot of work to do to reduce those harms.
Ms. Winters, are you hearing anything about the state of mind and well-being of the victim?
That's not, you know, again, we're kind of connected to the broader community of women who are having conversations about this. So, again, I think, you know, where Jane Doe is at in this is for her to say. And how I think that what we did hear was from the reporters in the courtroom who reported that she was elated at the verdict. So certainly I think that gave a sense of peace and a sense of, you know, just relief to the women who are watching and thinking of her.
Do you expect an appeal? And if so, how damaging could that possibly be?
I think, again, as a community, women were so deeply impacted by this. And again, everyone was kind of collectively holding their breath, waiting for the verdict around this. I hope that, you know, we can not cause more harm here. And that I think that could potentially be a very harmful thing. And we hope that that's not going to be the case.
And lastly, the feeling now, I mean, that the trial is over and the verdict is in, was justice done?
Again, I think that's something that only Jane Doe, the woman at the center of this, can define for herself. But I think, you know, from our perspective as a women-serving organization, this was not a just process. This was a really difficult, really harmful process. Again, for Jane Doe and for other survivors who are watching her endure this three times over. And that's, again, because that system is not designed to ensure justice for survivors. We as an organization are in the business of believing women. The criminal justice system is not. So that's the issue. That's the problem. And I think that's where the harm comes from. So again, I hope that this is the start of a much bigger conversation about change and what's needed so that the next survivors going through this system don't experience that same level of harm.
I thank you so much for your time, and I thank you for joining the VOCM Morning Show.
Oh, thank you.